Now, Hurricane Ida tore through the southern United States this weekend, including Louisiana and Mississippi. As the storm made its way through the northeastern part of the U.S. over the last few days, we've seen significant flooding along roadways, washed out highways, ongoing power outages, and more. Hurricane Ida is being held up as an example of the ways that storms are getting stronger as a result of climate change. And as we see more severe weather, not just hurricanes, we're going to see more of an impact on our infrastructure. That, in turn, is going to impact our safety, as we've seen around the country, sometimes even here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about our infrastructure and how it could weather a changing climate? How worried are you about the impact of climate change on our roads, bridges, power grids, and more? If you've gone through a severe storm, what have you seen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Joseph Schofer is Professor Emeritus of Civil and Environmental Engineering for the McCormick School of Engineering at Northwestern University. He also hosts the Infrastructure Show podcast. Joseph, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Well, as we watch the progress of Hurricane Ida, I mean, a lot of infrastructure right there on the screen washed out. What are you thinking as you watch the progress of this storm?
Well, I'm not happy about it. That's a useful question. What am I thinking? I study infrastructure, and particularly I study the resilience of infrastructure. So for me, this is a learning experience, despite the suffering that people go through. And arguably, it's a learning experience for our leaders and for us as individuals to see what happens in the face of a terrible storm like this and to think through how we can be better prepared. How can we secure our infrastructure, and how can we secure ourselves? So every time there's a disastrous event like this, it presents a learning opportunity, and it's to our advantage to learn from it.
One lesson learned, some people have pointed out, is the things we did in the New Orleans area after Hurricane Katrina seem to have helped with Ida. Can you talk about what we've seen in the performance of post-Katrina infrastructure changes that might have saved maybe a lot of lives?
Well, Rob, I like the way you said it. You said it's the investments seem to have helped. The story is not completely in. Mm. And despite the fact that we've invested something like $14.5 billion in protection from storm surges and flooding, and those systems seem to have worked, Ida was a different storm than Katrina in a variety of ways, in terms of strength, in terms of duration, and particularly in terms of track. And so it tested some parts of the infrastructure, and it didn't test other parts. However, it does seem that there were no major failures, and that's a huge credit, because in the case of Katrina, again, a different storm, there were massive failures and the loss of something more than 1,800 lives. So we didn't have that in this case. Other things failed, but the flooding was not nearly the problem it was before.
Now, thinking about the way I asked that question, did the last disaster help us get things in place for a future disaster? Is there a more proactive way to think about things, though, instead of let's learn from this disaster to prevent future ones, trying to figure out how we can be ready before that big disaster?
Yeah, well, you're asking us to be smarter than we usually are, and you should ask that question. So, but I think it's a two-part question, or I'm going to make it that. Yes, we learned from Katrina. We learned a lot from Katrina. We learned things that are not so visible. So we learned to protect parts of New Orleans from storm surge and from flooding, and that investment I think was a good investment, and it will pay off in large amounts in the future. It's interesting for me to observe that other places learn from Katrina. So, for example, New York City was better prepared for Tropical Storm Sandy, which created similar storm surges a number of years later, because leadership, particularly in the transportation sector, said, we see what's going on in New Orleans, let's not let it happen to New York. So the learning was widespread. Can we anticipate? Yes, we can anticipate. It's hard, because what you're really asking people to do is to invest resources, invest money, to prepare for something that hasn't happened yet, but might happen, and that investment might pay off. So there's a lot of uncertainty in that. And it's hard to get the public and its leaders to make those kinds of financial commitments. It's not that we don't do it, but these are hard decisions to make.
And we buy insurance as individuals. Is that the kind of mindset we need as a society?
Well, that's the right question to ask, Rob. Yes, we're really talking about insurance in the form of infrastructure investments to protect ourselves in the future. However, think about this, that look at the people who could buy flood insurance that don't buy flood insurance. So not everybody buys insurance. People decide to take the risk. And when these long-term infrastructure resilience investments are competing against an investment with a short-term payoff, a project that we feel we need to invest in right now because it's going to pay off next year, sometimes it's really hard for decision makers to say, no, we'll wait on the current investment and we'll invest for the long term. Difficult decisions to make.
We are talking about infrastructure and climate change. Joseph Schoffer is with us, Professor Emeritus at the McCormick School of Engineering at Northwestern University. You can hear him on the Infrastructure Show podcast. Joseph, climate change, how does that change the way we try to make these predictions, try to make these investments to prevent damage from our changing weather systems?
Well, so one of the ways we predict the future is we learn from the past and we collect data on the past and project that into the future. And that's really one of the ways that we predict the risk from disastrous natural hazards. So we can talk about, for example, it's a really unfortunate term, but the 100-year mm-hmm. flood, which is really a flood that has a chance of 1% in any one year, one out of 100. The problem that climate change presents us with is the 100-year flood is coming every 50 years or every 25 years. So the pattern is changing, and we don't fully understand how that pattern is changing, but it's not getting better. It's very clear that it's getting worse. So it makes the prediction, the long-term prediction, more difficult.
Joseph, of course, there's two infrastructure bills before Congress right now. If legislative leaders came to you and said, Joseph, we want to earmark some of this stuff for climate resilience in infrastructure, what would be at the top of your triage list to put that money into?
Well, let me turn that around and say, so you're talking about spending $1 trillion, really a $500 billion in new spending. And what I would say is every major investment that you make ought to be made with resilience to natural disasters in mind. That is, we ought to be building resilience at every opportunity, not necessarily the smallest projects, but any large project ought to be selected and designed so that it gives us another layer of climate resilience. That is quite possible. It's just a matter of making sure that is on the agenda when we make these investments. The really important aspect of this infrastructure bill or these infrastructure bills is that the money be spent well with good information, good data, and thoughtful design, and with, in this case, with resilience in mind.
Now, a few years back, we had some serious flooding in northern Wisconsin along Lake Superior, washed out some roads. And I heard from some local officials up there who said, yeah, this federal relief money, they would pay for us to rebuild exactly the road that got washed out, not to upgrade it to prevent it being washed out in a future storm. Have you encountered that kind of thing before?
Yes, I have. I have heard that. I can't say that I've encountered it personally, but I've had people with state departments of transportation tell me exactly that. So that's one of the failures of federal policy, that we're so concerned about spending the money in a careful way, in a thoughtful way, and not overspending, that we're not looking ahead. We're not looking a decade or two decades or three decades ahead and saying, this could come back to us again. Let's prevent the damage that we experienced. So that requires a change in federal policy, a change in federal criteria. I would say that there are some federal programs that permit building at a higher level of resilience, but they take some extra justification. I don't mind the extra justification, but I think it's really important. You know, if you get flooding in your basement 6 inches deep, you ought to think about the possibility that the next time it's going to be 2 feet deep, and let's try to prevent that.
We continue our conversation about infrastructure as climate change creates stronger and stronger storms and other risks of natural disasters that can have a big impact on human-made infrastructure. Joseph Schoeffer is with us, Professor Emeritus of Civil and Environmental Engineering for the McCormick School of Engineering at Northwestern University. He hosts the Infrastructure Show podcast. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Have you ever moved or thought about moving because of the risk of flooding or storms or droughts or wildfires in an area? Do you think as we are looking to spend infrastructure money, we need to think about it differently and the way we build our stuff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you've lived in places like Northern Wisconsin hit by flooding, Gays Mills, other places that have taken a hit from some form of disaster, love to hear your experience. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Joseph, we hear sometimes with places in the course of hurricanes or facing flooding or wildfires on the western part of the country, worst case scenarios where people think, should we live here anymore? Should we have communities in the face of these kind of disasters? How do we make those kind of decisions?
These are hard decisions to make, mm-hmm. but increasingly you're seeing people make them. Increasingly around the world, there are governments that are stepping in and helping people to relocate in a strategic way. There are some locations which are not viable. And what we've been doing over the years is subsidizing people to live in those locations. For example, we subsidize flood insurance for people that live in flood zones. And it's relatively easy for people to collect on to experience the damage, collect on the insurance, and then but stay in those locations and stay exposed to hazards. And I think there are cases, and there's certainly not everywhere, but there are some cases where we ought to consider helping people to relocate out of zones of danger.
How?
And it's hard because you're saying, I want you to leave your home, and people don't want to leave their home. So we have to facilitate that in cases where the balance between costs and the benefits of living in a location are really not favorable for society.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Eau Claire. Jeff, hi.
Hi, how are you? So my comment was in regards to the thousands and thousands of acres of wetlands and fens and Everglades that are drained and have been drained over the centuries for construction. And, you know, that was created by nature as a buffer for hurricanes and flooding. And just wondering how that lends into how we change our ideas and thoughts on future infrastructure construction and changes for that.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Joseph, do you have an answer for Jeff?
It asks us to look long term and think about the trade-off between the value of that construction and the cost of losing those wetlands. And I think we've been short-sighted on that. And what you're seeing as a consequence, particularly of Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, that there's been a major effort to rebuild the natural protections in southern Louisiana. It's hard to do. Biologically, it's hard to do. It's expensive, but that's really nature really provides a better defense system than we can build ourselves. So that's a really valuable option in some cases. In places, particularly in the East Coast, where you have cities built up right against the ocean on bays and on the water. Relocation is hard and it's expensive. And there you might say, well, we need to build the infrastructure to protect those places. But there are other places that are more lightly settled where it really makes sense, not only for the individual, but for society, given the social costs to help people relocate.
Jeff, thanks for that call. Go to Randy now in Ripon. Randy, hello.
Hi. I've been a carpenter for about 50 years, and I never understood why in hurricane-prone areas, I mean, they have them up on stilts now. I see that. But why they're not made circular or dome or even an octagon shape so that the wind will move around them rather than if you can take a quarter inch thick 4x8 sheet of plywood in a 10, 15 mile an hour windy day, and I'll guarantee it'll rip it right out of your hands. and we're not even talking, you know, the winds of a hurricane, why the insurance companies or somebody doesn't require this.
Interesting. Randy, thanks. I hadn't heard about that, Joseph. I guess aerodynamic building design. Is that a thing?
It's a thing, but I don't think you see very much of it. Possibly it's related to the cost of construction. But in a lot of cases, there's uplift that for example, rips a roof off of a building. And the freeboard of the building probably wouldn't make a lot of difference. But there are construction details that can be changed that really make a lot of difference. So in a case where flooding is common, raising the elevation of a structure is typical along coastlines, but also doing simple things with construction, that is stronger construction joints for wood frame buildings, really make a difference. It's a matter of saying, I need to prepare for this and I'm going to make the extra investment in building better.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking about infrastructure amidst a changing climate. Joseph Schofer stays with us from Northwestern University. Back to your calls now. Chad is with us in Waterloo. Chad, hi.
Hey. Hi there, great topic. My question is, in the Midwest here and in our state, what would be kind of the major issues that maybe we could have more focus on, or groups like the Department of Natural Resources, things like that, that maybe we could see a little more focus on? And what would worry you more? Something that would be weather-related or more industrial-related, like an accident or something like that?
Chad, thanks for the call. So Chad worried about not just natural, quote-unquote, disasters, but industrial disasters as well. Is that part of our infrastructure thinking, Joseph?
It's something to think about. There the issue falls very much more on the private sector on government regulatory processes. And there are industrial accidents that happen all over the world. They're not common, but they do happen. It's less of an infrastructure problem and more of a sort of a managing the operations problem. But I want to take you back to his other point, mm-hmm. which is what's specific for Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is, and you mentioned this, wildfires are not so rare in Wisconsin. Floods are not so rare in Wisconsin, and particularly the kind of flooding, two kinds of flooding that I can think of. One that just happened in New York, which makes the New York case of Hurricane Ida particularly important in terms of learning, and that is flash flooding. Flash flooding in a case where in New York City, flash flooding doesn't happen or didn't happen before, and it's fairly rare in other places. So one needs to be prepared for that in terms of design of infrastructure and building resilience into that infrastructure. But there are also dam failures. Dams are all over the nation. In Wisconsin, is not unusual in that sense. Recently, within the past year, two privately owned dams failed in the state of Michigan, which is not very, very far away, and created massive damage. It was a heavy rainstorm, and the dams failed in those cases. And one of the things we're seeing with dams, which we think about as kind of public infrastructure, is that a very large fraction of the dams in the United States are privately owned by agricultural establishments or local power companies, and may not be as well maintained as we'd like them to be to protect us from overtopping and failure.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for one more caller. Kelly is with us in Cascade. Kelly, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a climate action coach. This is an excellent conversation. Prior to moving back to the Wisconsin area in 2017 to buy a farm, I lived in Colorado, California, Washington State, lived through forest fires, unprecedented windstorms. I was preparing for Cascadia Rising and the massive earthquakes that they predict will hit the West Coast and the tsunamis. And a lot of money and infrastructure changes were happening to help with whatever they could mitigate, not everything. When I came back to Wisconsin, a year after buying our farm, we had 60-plus unprecedented storms that were, you know, tornadoes and high winds, and lost just a ridiculous number of trees and, you know, we've had the slow creep of climate change affecting a lot of our trees that were just devastated during these storms.
And Kelly, I'm sorry, we're just about out of time, but I mean, Kelly definitely makes it clear no place can ignore these issues, it sounds like, Joseph.
That's right. That is right. Nobody is immune, but and everybody has their private natural hazards. They vary substantially across the country, but they exist, and one needs to prepare for them. So one of the steps one needs to do in preparing is to be quite aware of what hazards we're exposed to in the place that we're living.
Kelly, thanks for the call. Joseph, I hope we can talk to you again. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm happy to have had the conversation. Thank you very much.
That's Joseph Schoffer, Professor Emeritus of Civil and Environmental Engineering for the McCormick School of Engineering at Northwestern University. You can hear him more on the podcast, The Infrastructure Show. He joined us today to talk about infrastructure and climate change.